I remember Jack going, how many techs do you have? And I was like, it's just me. He goes, we manage 8,000 apartments in Portland.
Whoa.
We're going to drown you. You need to start hiring now. And then on the drive home, I was like, Dad, you're right. I got to start hiring. So
holy crap.
That's when I had that kind of aha moment. Like, this could be more than like a little gig.
That's wild. All right, welcome back to The Pursuit of Profit. Today's guest is Jacob Grady, founder and CEO of Surface Experts. Surface Experts operates in a category where the greatest advantage is that no one else is doing what they do. And the greatest challenge is no one else is doing what they do. They're not competing in a crowded space. They're building the category. This is a 99% B2B business. They serve commercial clients like hotels, construction companies, property managers, real estate operators, and moving companies. It's a mobile model, not retail, which means really low overhead, fewer fixed costs, and in many cases, the ability to operate from home in the very beginning. From a lifestyle standpoint, this is typically a Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 business. There's no late nights, no weekends, no holidays, and no consumer foot traffic. It's not retail. The value proposition is simple but powerful. Repair instead of replace. That creates a strong recurring revenue through ongoing commercial relationships. And in tighter economic environments, it's a model that would be considered recession resilient by design. And the performance numbers are compelling. The average location in the top 25% of the system is generating approximately $1.2 million in gross revenue, with the largest operator doing $2.6 million. This is driven by repeat B2B clients, not one-off consumer jobs. All right, let's get into it. So I want to begin here. As much as I want to talk about Surface Experts, I also want to discuss the brilliance of being a first mover,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't understand how intelligent you need to be as a founder, as a CEO, to bring a concept to the market that no one has ever heard of. And so this is my question for you. The best thing about Surface Experts, right, and what you do is that no one else does it.
Yep.
But the worst thing about what you do is that no one else does it.
Yep.
So how did you launch Surface Experts? How did you educate the market to think repair versus replacement?
So the secret to our success of educating people comes from kind of like my roots. And I work with my sister, who's our chief sales officer. She works exclusively with our franchisees and their salespeople, training them on our sales method. And the sales method goes all the way back to college days where I spent 4 years selling educational books door to door on the East Coast.
Wow.
Southwestern Company. They're the oldest direct sales company in the nation. They train about 3,000 college students a year. And you're going out and you're selling, we would work 80 to 85 hours a week. I'm selling educational books. They were really good books. But you are knocking on someone's door. They're looking at me like, there's internet. Is this, you know, what are you, is this, you know, some sort of like new encyclopedia? No. So you're dealing with all these objections and you're dealing with them quickly and you're getting to the buying points in a very short, narrow window. So we're built based off of building relationships with people. And when we say building relationships, you're answering those fundamental questions of what do? Who am I? And then like, how are we going to help you? We're not schmoozy. We're not like, hey, let me, you know, whatever. It's to the point. It's a 15 to 20 minute sales cycle and we're in and we're out. And that is like the biggest, it's dealing with those objections before they come out of their mouths. That's what gets the ball rolling.
Yeah. Your background though, in sales is powerful. I mean, that may not be the best business model in an era of the internet and the fact that anything in print has already outdated itself.
Yeah.
But what an experience. Like I'd put my kid in something like that. Like go bang on doors. You'll become a masterful. Oh.
Harvard Business was at my training. They sent the entire Harvard Business School to go through the same training I went through when I was in Nashville. And it's like great.
It's wild.
It's kind of a crucible type job where you work super hard, but you learn a ton.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And you've taken that skill set and it's still with you today. Yeah. Most people don't get the full story when they start exploring franchising. So they make mistakes that cost them big. That's why my business partner, Justin Guevara, and I wrote Beyond the Brand. The Entrepreneur's Guide to Fearless Franchising. It is our proven six-step process at Phrenosity to help you find the right franchise, avoid costly pitfalls, and build a business that truly fits your goals. Grab your copy of Beyond the Brand on Amazon or any major book retailer and start building your future fearlessly. So go back to this Bogota story. Yeah. What's going on in Bogota, Colombia?
Well, you know, it's just the birthplace of all the franchises, right? Bogota, Colombia.
Oh,
right. Now, I out of college, I knew I wanted to work and live in Latin America. I love Latin American culture. I sold books my final summer in Princeton, New Jersey, made enough money to pay off school, and then had 2 years of expenses covered. So I moved to Bogota to work with this church. So friends of ours had this small repair business up in Washington State. And we said, hey, what do you think about coming down and training me and a couple people from the church, and we'll start a business here? So they came down. My dad chipped in money. We bought a motorcycle. We fabricated this like fiberglass box that sat on the back of the motorcycle that we could put all our tools in. And I'm out pedaling. I'm on my motorcycle driving from hotel to hotel, like these nicer hotels and restaurants and clubs, selling repairs, you know, because they had settling cracks. These buildings would settle, mm-hmm. and you get these cracks through tile and through, you know, damage on wood furniture. And again, talk about no one was doing that in Colombia. They just replace everything. And we were like, hey, we can fix this. So we built that up. We had that going. I lived there for a few years. My wife and I decided to move back to the States. We weren't ready to move back to Spokane, which is where we're both from. We moved to Portland, and I had this dream of starting a chocolate, like a gourmet chocolate business. And this was in 2009, March of 2009.
Okay.
And my dad, who's a serial entrepreneur, he started multiple businesses. He's like, Jacob, we're going through like one of the worst financial times. Like, no one's going to buy your $5 truffle. Like, don't buy it.
It's a housing crisis.
Oh, yeah.
You're in the housing crisis. Yeah.
And I started looking at like leases for commercial leases, and it was super expensive. And I was like, man, I need $250,000 just to even like get off the ground with this chocolate business. And he goes, why don't you do the spot repair business? So we started that.
Interesting.
I had a door blank sitting on two filing cabinets, and it was just me, myself, and I. And I was going out doing repairs. I'd go out and sell. I'd make notes. To this day, I have a journal where I was like, I need to talk to the decision maker. And the decision maker is the head of maintenance. And it helps when I walk a vacant, you know, kind of making notes like that.
Right, right.
And all the while, my dad's like, you got to like scale or this thing's not going to go anywhere. Like, you need to hire techs. And then I had this aha moment. I'm calling through the yellow pages. I get an appointment with Guardian. I'm just going through A to Z. Guardian Property Management. And I get this guy, Jack, on the phone. He's like, yeah, stop by my office tomorrow. I'll talk to you. So I go in there. I start talking with him. And he goes, hey, Jacob, I like you. Why don't you put your money where your mouth is? We got a mock-up of a kitchen back here. I'll go damage it and you fix it.
And I love it.
He goes, do you have your tools? And I was like, yeah, I did. I was a one-man show. So I went out, grabbed my car. I got my tools out of my car. I walk in. He gets his whole team out there. He goes, hey, Jacob says he can fix laminate counters, and he grabs a hammer and a chisel and just boom, just puts like a good old silver dollar size like hole in his brand new laminate countertop.
Wow.
So I start fixing it. About 30 minutes later, I'm like, hey, I'm done. They had all gone back to their office. They all come out and they're looking at it. And they're like, I remember Jack going, how many techs do you have? And I was like, it's just me. He goes, we manage 8,000 apartments in Portland.
Whoa.
We're going to drown you. You need to start hiring now. And then on the drive home, I was like, Dad, you're right. I got to start hiring. So that's kind of how it started. That's when I had that kind of aha moment. Like, this could be more than like a little gig, you know? Like,
That's wild. I love this. That's why I love having founders on.
Yeah.
You get the bet. That's great. Because everyone thinks you're an overnight success. Overnight, right? It's a Lambo, not a motorcycle with a fiberglass back. You know, it's just, you obviously have a ton of money. You were overly financed. You're perfect. You're the quintessential.
Budget on it.
That's right. That's right, man. And that's what people don't understand. It starts sleeping on the floor.
We'd
cold
sell
calling.
Something and I'd sell it and show up and they're like, oh, you're doing the repair. I'm like, yeah, you know, we're just really busy right now. Well, it's just me.
Right. I know. Yeah. My, My crews are exhausted. I'm here to lead. I'm here to lead by example.
Exactly. I use the royal we a lot early on.
That is a great story.
Yeah.
So then, you land this deal.
I go out and I hire this guy, Ben, and Ben Downing. And it's 2010. Ben is our first technician, and I'm training him. And then we start kind of scaling, creating some processes. We start adding some new services. We start doing stone repairs, stainless steel, glass cooktops. We're kind of adding more, adding new techs. And in 2017, I end up selling my business in Portland. It was great, but like we're in the process of adoption. We wanted to move back to Spokane. We had two kids, be close to family. So we moved back to Spokane. I think in my mind, I'm out of the whole repair business altogether. I'm looking at everything from Chick-fil-A to open up an ice cream store to buying car washes. I'm kind of all over the place. And then I meet this guy named Dennis Mulganin. Dennis Mulganin, do you know Dennis?
Yeah, I too.
Dennis Mulganin is going through the sort of like final steps as like a discovery in one of his franchise concepts. And at one point he goes, tell me about this like repair business you had in Portland. And I start telling him and I come alive because I love the fact like we offer a wow factor. I'm not like trying to sell better internet than the internet you already have, or I'm a better plumber than the plumber you use. Like every one of our customers are up a creek. They're looking at complete replacement or complete refinishing. And when I can come in and say, hey, we're going to fix that and do it for a fraction of the cost in less than time. And they're like, are you kidding me? And we do it. And they're like, this is awesome. So there's like a real like pride that I take in doing the work.
Right.
But it's cool to see the customers. So, and we work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. It's not crazy hours. I'm not working weekends. I'm not working evenings. So when I started telling him about this, he goes, hey, I'd love to explore. Have you ever thought about franchising? My dad and I had been talking about franchising, but I didn't know like how to start it. I was like, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. So him and I went back and forth for about 4 months, like looking. He was asking all these metrics that I had never really bothered to even look into. And then after 4 months of like kind of looking, he's like, let's do this. So he flipped to Spokane. We met and we decided let's do that. And that was the end of 2018, October 2018 when we became an official franchise. And we sold our first franchise in April of 2019. So that's the start of Surface Expert.
Wow. You're young.
Yeah.
But you have over 100. What are you up to? Like 140 sold?
No, 150? So we have 107 owners or like separate units. But then we have the equivalent of about 120 territories.
Because a multi-unit. So 107 franchisees control 120 territories.
Yeah. Like
how many are open?
So we have 94 open right now of the 107. You know, we say 94.
Wow.
But that represents probably like closer to 105, you know? So
good for you. That's quite an accomplishment. Yeah, man, I'm telling you, that's impressive in a short period of time. You're kissing 100. That's a hell of a milestone.
Yeah. Yeah. We have awesome owners. I always say that's probably one of the things that I am most proud about in the sense of like, you know, when I talk with other franchisors, it's really typical to have this sort of like, you know, franchisor versus franchisee kind of like tension. It's kind of built into the model. And there's a little that. But mostly I would say there's an awesome culture of people wanting to help each other out. Like I'll hear on a weekly basis, franchisees going over and helping another franchisee call in, doing ride-alongs. There's like just genuine desire to help other franchises, which is awesome.
That's a solid culture.
Yeah.
Let's get into the services like in order of this is where we make our money.
Mm-hmm.
So service, however you want to break down these services, how does that work?
So, you know, for your audience, we do spot repair on damages generally smaller than a dinner plate. I say generally, there are instances we do stuff that's bigger, but any interior hard surface. So bathtubs, number one service, we do a lot of repairs, chips, cracks, stains, holes on bathtubs. Number two, countertops. So that could be laminate countertops. It could be stone counters, quartz counters, kind of name it. But we do a lot of countertop repairs. Third, flooring. We do a ton of flooring. So vinyl, LVP, which is like luxury vinyl plank, wood floors, tile. We do a lot of that. Stainless steel. Elevator panels that get scratched up, refrigerator doors that get scratched, any like dishwasher doors, and then glass cooktops is a big one. Glass cooktops, you know, you have your cooktop that's a flat top. Those get just...
I saw a guy with a drill.
Yep.
Well, like a drill with a... And that thing looked brand new when he was done. It looked like it needed to be thrown in the garbage.
Yeah.
It had scratches and rings and looked like water burn.
We're launching our first franchise in Atlanta. And I remember walking with this maintenance guy. It was at a BH management property, 600 units. And we're talking about what we do. And he looked at my brochure and he goes, "Wait, you guys do glass cooktops?" And they go, "Yeah." He goes, "We throw 200 of these away." And because the cost of the glass is about 80% of a new stove range.
Wow.
We chuck the entire thing in the dump. I was like, "You throw the whole thing away." He's like, "Oh yeah." And we just bill the resident the $550, whatever it is to replace. I was like, "We can fix that for $175. He's like, "All day, every day. Like, I will do that." Like, that's amazing. So like when we talk to customers or when we talk to franchisees or potential franchisees, we save people a ton of time and a ton of money. Like that's what really gets them. But when we start using us for a while, it's the amount of waste. I mean, just if you hang out in an apartment complex or in a hotel during a remodel, the amount of stuff that gets torn out and thrown away, it's astronomical. So
I bet
it's a huge amount
just
of waste. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you kind of green, right?
Very green.
You're kind of a green concept, saving people money, saving landfills from, I don't know, thousands of ovens.
Yeah. Refrigerator doors are really those things. The doors themselves, GE knows what they're doing. GE and Samsung, they charge the bulk of the cost of a refrigerator is in the door or it's the glass cooktop.
Right.
It's all cosmetic. So when we can fix it, you can keep the appliance. You're not tearing that thing out. It's not ending up in a landfill.
Yeah. I love that. All right. So we just went through all those services.
Yep.
Any additional services that we didn't talk about? Like when I look at your marketing, I see the appliances, the glass cooktops. I see thermofoil, which I hate.
Cabinet repairs. Yep.
I can't even believe this. I'm sorry, Jacob. I can't believe this actually became a product and went to market. Yeah. Have you ever owned bonded leather products?
Oh yeah.
Like it should be banned. It should be illegal to sell bonded leather. Yeah. I think thermofoil is the bonded leather version of furniture.
Yeah. No, it's a good comparison. It is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And it's growing. It is like the number one cabinet that's going in right now. And we do a ton of repairs on it. So, and cabinetry is like a good example of like cabinet manufacturers. They'll make cabinets. They source all the materials. They create all their jigs. They set up all their templates. They make a bajillion cabinets, and then they never make that cabinet again, right? Because they're doing everything in mass.
Okay.
So when a customer's like, "Hey, can I get 6 doors of that, golden oak shaker?" They're like, "Nope, like we don't make that anymore." And so the customers are really, again, kind of in this hard place where we can go out and repair it versus them having to swap out all the doors or all the cabinets.
Unreal. Yeah. And you know, you're an interesting brand because you're not fiber new, right? You're kind of your own category. You agree with that statement?
Yeah.
Like you do things, but more things than some of these other brands that claim to repair. And their real laser focus is, let's say, vinyl and plastic.
Yeah.
You're getting involved in countertops, stone, quartz, laminate.
Yeah.
I mean,
so we're all
fiberglass and porcelain.
All hard surfaces, and we're 99% B2B, and we're executive. So like, if someone comes to us and says, "Hey, man, I love your model. I'm just really excited. I'm really handy. I want to get out there and do it." We'll kind of dig a little deeper. We're not looking for like chuck in a truck type setup. We want people who are like, "I want to scale this. I want to have 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 techs and a couple salespeople. I want to build a business." We're not looking for somebody who kind of wants like a sort of a job into retirement where they're like, you know, doing the repairs. They love just kind of getting their hands dirty. That's not our franchisee.
Right. But you also don't want them fixing a vinyl countertop.
Yeah.
You know, like laminate. Yep. You want them working on the business, not in it.
Yep.
It's like, you're not semi-absentee. No. You're going to be fully involved and immersed in the business.
Yeah.
I want you selling, marketing.
Yeah.
They need to be doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Go meet that property manager with 800 units. What would you say? 8,000?
Well,
what was the number again?
That one Mandarin company had 8,000 units in just the Portland area.
Right. Go meet that guy.
Yep.
That's what that should be your life's work. If you're going to buy my franchise, go meet those people.
And now, we have franchisees that will roll up their sleeves and help out with tech repair. And that's totally fine. But that's not like their main job, right?
The core, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Their main core is developing their people and developing relationships with customers, because that's only something that they can do.
That's how you're going to get to 200 plus.
Yep.
Is that mindset right there?
Yep.
And not caving to the broker community that wants you to just say yes to everything. Do you do international? Yes. Do you do E2 visas? Yes. Do you do semi-absentee? Yeah. Yes. Can I work from home forever? Yes. No. The answer is no.
Yeah.
I want my franchisees involved in the day-to-day operation of the business. I don't want them repairing things unless needed.
Yeah.
I want them working on the business, not in it. I completely agree with you.
Early on,
there's just so much pressure for you to say yes to a lot of things you shouldn't be.
Yeah. Early on, I would say when we first started, I had this sort of like imposter syndrome where like I'm selling like a methodology of repairs and how to sell that. And like, but in my mind, I'm thinking, was Portland a fluke? Like what I did in Portland, like, was that a fluke? Is this going to work? And we started seeing some franchises scale, you know, shout out. We have a franchise that's, they're still our number one husband wife duo that came in out of Colorado. It just crushed. Like they came in, did almost $1 million in like their first year. You know, they did 2.6 last year. I think I can say that because it's in the FDD.
Yeah, it's in the FDD. Yeah.
It's 2024. They did that. And that was in their third year. And they, you know, I think they really helped raise the belief barrier, but we've seen just all these franchises scaling faster. And I think what my conviction in our process grew in those first, after the first couple of years, like, no, we need to find people who stick to this because we know this works. Like we know this works.
Yeah. You also do something that I'm seeing as a theme in franchising. Franchisees, I've been doing this 25 years.
Okay.
Franchisees do not answer their phone. They don't.
Yeah.
They will not. They'll tell you all the things that they know they need to do. And then you call them and it goes to voicemail or it goes to someone that can't answer basic questions. They hang up and the person dials another competitor and the deal is won. I heard that you're redirecting franchisees' phone numbers to your call center to address each call properly.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. So every franchise starts with like a VoIP number, like a voice over IP. So like you're based in Florida, where you're going to have a Florida phone number, but that gets routed to our support center. We call it our support center. It's open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. no matter where you're at in continental U.S. So we have people coming in just right before 6 a.m. Pacific time. That's where we're located and stay till a little bit after 5. But we have people who talk in Spanish, answer in Spanish, English. There's a lot that goes into, like, we're not one of those businesses. Like, if people can't get someone on the phone, there's like, shoot, I'll just replace it, right?
Right.
And so we want there to always be someone who can pick up the phone, get a picture, create the work order, put it on the job. We're kind of like air traffic control, right? Just get the play landed. We'll let the franchisee figure out what tech they want to put it on, or they can tell us and we'll put it there.
Are you doing estimates right over the phone? Or scheduling?
Yeah, so we do scheduling. If they want an estimate, we'll get like a picture and send it to them. We don't give any prices without the consent of like the franchisees or their salespeople.
Okay.
So every franchise starts with one salesperson, one tech. So most salespeople, they're out there doing sales stops. Well, the last thing we want is the salesperson going back to their phone. You know, they spend 15, 20 minutes in their car putting together an estimate. They just send over us the details. We'll create the estimate. You keep going, salesperson, like keep doing your sales stops. So we'll generate the estimate. We'll get it out to that customer right away. Customer gets back to us, says, yes, let's do it. We then create the work order, put it on their schedule. So that's what our support center focuses on. We also do accounts receivable. So we'll call on accounts receivable for franchisees. We'll call through, hey, just wondering if you got the invoice. Want to make sure they're going to follow up with you. Who handles this? Send them the invoice. Most of what we, you know, we're net 30 terms. But you know, you have people that, oh, the invoice went to the wrong email address. Okay, we need to follow up on that, send it to the right email address. And then we do bookkeeping for our franchises also. So it's all included in that fee. So most franchisees, I don't know how it was in your experience, accounting's not their jam, right? Like,
no, never.
You know, you look at their chart of accounts, it's a total mess. And so what we decided years ago was let's build out a bookkeeping team. And this bookkeeping team goes on with QuickBooks Online and just makes sure that all the, you know, invoices and deposits are all tied in, all the expenses are correctly categorized, because we have these peer performance groups. So if you and I are a peer performance group, we can have an apples to apples conversation like, hey, Cliff, why is your cost of goods 4% and mine's 9%? Why is your labor 48% of your, you know, revenue and mine's 42%? We can have those conversations.
Absolutely. Right. Because there's consistency in the way the books are done.
Yep.
Absolutely. Is this all within the royalty structure or no? There's a royalty and then it's a la carte for all these services.
So it's royalty is 8%. And then our support center, it covers all the things I just said. That's a 4%.
Okay.
Now it scales when you go over 80,000 in revenue a month, it tiers down to 2%. Most people, when they're getting to about 80,000 consistently, they're starting to bring on maybe an in-house admin, like a part-time or, you know, someone who's good admin. Right. So we scale it down to 2%, anything after 80,000. But yeah, there's a whole list of services that are covered under that 4% support.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're making really smart moves. I support all those moves. I think it's brilliant. And you're right. Franchisees can't produce a P&L. The average franchisee doesn't know how to read the P&L.
Yeah.
They don't know how to allocate the expenses. They don't know where the curbs are. They don't know what's an acceptable range of labor or cost of goods. They just don't obsess over the right KPIs.
Yeah.
It's interesting where they put their attention.
Well,
and it's like, man, that's what you're worried about today?
Yeah. Totally. And I find that people are afraid, like there's all this kind of like, if you don't know the financials and how to read your financials, there's always going to be this kind of low level fear that's in the back of your mind. Like, ooh, I don't want to crack that box because I'm scared what I'm going to learn. I just want to make sure that there's money in my bank account, right?
That's so true.
So you avoid learning on the very things that you could be actually improving on, you know, but you're just kind of like, as long as I'm paying my bills, I kind of don't really want to know too much about that, you know?
Right. So true. Speaking of KPIs, what's the average repair price relative to the average job when you show up on the scene?
Yeah. Let me see here what I have. I had my FD, so I make sure from last year. Okay. So growth. So like your average like ticket, like I just got a job, $414 is what we have for 2024. 414, and then the average repair revenue is 281. So we train our franchisees to get add-ons, right? So like if I show up in an apartment complex and I'm fixing your floor, I look over and there's like a little chip on the edge of the counter. We train our technicians to say, hey, you know, Jose, the maintenance guy, or Mike, hey, I'm out here doing the repair. Do you want me to take care of that counter? And so often they're like, oh yeah, go ahead and take care of that. Oh, I didn't even see that there. We just had an add-on competition because November, December are slow months. And so we're giving out gift cards to the technicians and teams that have the most add-ons. Those add-ons, not only do they add revenue, but it's the aha moment. Going back to the first question you asked me in this call is like, how do you educate people? If I had a dollar, sometimes this happened, I would be a very, very wealthy man. But like, I'll show up, I'm talking to a maintenance guy, we're sales call. He's so focused on the tub. I'm like, yeah, we can fix that for you, but you know, this countertop, the crack or whatever. You guys do counters? I've told him, I've done 6 sales calls there. Every single time I'm there, I tell him about counters, but he doesn't have an aha moment until I connect what I do with a need that he has. And now that's in his mind, we're the countertop people. Now, he didn't hear that I said glass cooktops and stainless and floors and cabinets, but we'll get there. We'll get there. It's an education. It's a process, you know?
Yeah, it is so true. I agree with you. you can never over communicate like what you do, what you want with a customer.
Yeah.
Tell me about these key accounts. This is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I hope it is what I hope it is what I think it is.
Well, no, Graystar, it
probably isn't. Lennar, well, Marriott.
This is one of those things where I have to be really careful because I think brokers and consultants oversell this. So we do, there's kind of two types of key accounts that we have. Key partnerships. We have key partnerships where we do work with them all over the country. Lennar, Graystar is the largest property management company in the nation. They manage about a million doors. We do work with them everywhere they're at and where we're at. So we do a ton of work with them. When I say that's a key account, we're doing a ton of work with them. Let's say you're a property manager at a Graystar property and I show up at your turf and I walk in. The first thing you're thinking is, who are you? What are you doing here, right? And I say, hey, I'm Jacob with Surface Experts. We're vendors with Graystar. We do work with Graystar all over Florida. And you're like, oh, awesome. What do you guys do? I can then go through the compliance process much faster because we're already, as a company, working with Graystar all over. The challenge with is within property management and Lennar's largest construction company is who cares if you got some key contract up top? If Joe, the maintenance guy, or Bill, the project manager at a build, doesn't know how you're going to help them, they could care less what corporates is. They could literally, they don't give a rip. And so that's where we still have to educate. We have to build a relationship with the onsite person. Now, the second one, the second type of key partnership we have is something like American Bath Group or Kohler, where we do have that relationship with a, like a, their corporate. It's more of a centralized relationship. So their call center calls our call center, or their call center calls, you know, a franchisee and says, hey, I got five tubs that were delivered to a project and they're all cracked. They're all chipped. Or we installed 30 tubs and they weren't installed, you know, or 30 tubs got installed and they weren't installed correctly. They all have, you know, air pockets and some chips in them or cracks. That's that kind of key partnership.
Okay. How do you think the brokers are overselling it? Because they're saying these are national accounts and they're going to feed you everyday business. Is that how it's being so oversold?
Yeah. I think sometimes people come to us and it's a red flag when they're thinking, I'm going to just hang a shingle. I'm going to open my business and, you know, national accounts is just going to roll in.
Okay.
Like, yeah, you might get some jobs. Like we have this one company called Granite Gold where we do a lot of repairs. They sell sort of warranty on stone repairs. You know, or stone countertops. We do work with them, but it's not like the bulk of your work is building out that local relationship.
Right, right. Totally get it.
So like in the upside of this, for people who are like, oh, you know, like that doesn't feel great. Your average franchise, you know, has been open for 3 or 4 years. They're going to have about 400 customers. You know, like your revenue is spread out. You lose a customer. Okay, like really doesn't, you know, you're going to lose customers, gain customers, but we're really spread out. We're not putting all our eggs in one big key national account that's going to bring in revenue. And then one day some franchisee makes them mad and we lose the whole account, you know?
Right, right. Absolutely. No, I totally get it. And I could see where that can be oversold.
Yeah.
And I could also see where it can create like an influx of franchisees where it's like, you really don't want to work hard. No, not really. Yeah. You really don't like B2B selling. Well, no, I don't need to like B2B selling. You have all these national accounts.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a living. No, it's not going to work that way.
Yeah.
My business partner says it best. He goes, these key accounts, these are the sprinkles that are on top of the icing that are on top of the cake.
Yeah.
You got to earn all that below to get the sprinkles of these key accounts.
Yeah, that's another one.
And it's like, oh, hey, it's just like, it's not 90% of your revenue. Maybe it's 10.
Yeah. If that, yeah. And I think that's always like, that's really important for people to hear. And it's going to excite the right person and discourage the wrong person. And I'm fine with that. Totally fine with
exactly.
Like
exactly.
I always wanted to be in a business where I was the gas pedal. Like I don't want to be reliant on pay-per-click for what new algorithm just came out in Google and just hoping that like I can find some influencers that like pump my brand up. No, like I can walk out my door, go talk to 15 properties and build business that way.
And make the phone ring. Exactly.
Yeah.
Jacob, how I want to wrap my head around the labor model because the labor model is really not a lot of people, especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
Help me help me understand the $2.6 million guy, for example.
Okay.
What does that organization look like? And if it's easier to just use a million, it's like, listen, one salesperson can generate X amount of revenue.
Yeah.
Right? Because this is not a one and done business.
Yeah.
This is a recurring revenue model. As soon as you win them over.
Recurring.
Yeah.
Very much.
Totally.
And you're educating.
What can a salesperson do?
Yeah. So, you know, you get a customer and they're using you for tubs, and then you're adding floors, and then you're adding cabinet. And so that's kind of how that recurring model builds. So we have franchises that have, I was listening to one of our validation calls from the other day. We have great validation. We've got 18 franchises that do validation for us. And he's new, but he's got four techs. He's got one salesperson. And I think he helps out on the sales side of things. And they're going to do about 1.2 this year. So I would say your typical tech is doing 20 to 25,000. If they're a good tech and they're producing maybe north of 25 to 30,000 in a month.
Okay.
So one salesperson for three techs is pretty typical. Maybe you can get up to four techs. We launched our own franchise in Portland last year, in 2024. May of 24, and we run, right now we just hired another tech, but we're at two salespeople, six techs.
Okay. One salesman can feed four techs,
yep,
which produces a million in revenue.
Yeah. I would say three to four techs. Yep.
Okay.
That franchise in 2.6, they had two salespeople. I want to say nine techs, but maybe 10 if you include like the owner who's involved. He doesn't get out. He tries to not do any repairs, but he's a good repair guy. So they have, it's a husband wife couple. They have two salespeople and I want to say nine techs in there.
Okay. And they're doing $1.3 million per salesperson.
Yeah.
$1.3 million.
Yeah.
How much are these sales guys making? They're making six figures, I would imagine.
So there's right? different models. They do a 10% model. 10%. They do kind of like let them scale. And then they'll say, hey, after whatever, a certain amount of 6 months, you're on a 10% commission. Everyone's different though. Some people do it where they'll pay a base plus, you know, commission. Everyone's kind of different.
Okay. Okay.
You allow them to just, you know, be flexible.
You've got a great model. We're recession resilient. Repair, don't replace. We have phenomenal hours.
Yeah.
Monday through Friday, no weekends, no hot, right? You could really make your own hours.
35 hours a week.
Right. I mean, come on. A lot of people don't put enough emphasis on, you know, they're like, I want to do food. Okay, food, 7 days a week, 10 a.m., 10 p.m. Like, what a life.
Yeah.
What a life. Weekends and holidays, you're off like 3-4 days a year. Good for you.
Yeah.
And you're not making any money, by the way.
And if we do,
you're making 8% net.
That doesn't turn out well. Like, we're like, shoot. We always tell them, like, look, we can take it back to what it was. Like, so we're not like, you know, we're rarely in a position where we're like, shoot, this is on us. We have to like buy
you. You can reverse it.
Yeah, we can reverse everything. And most of our people, we don't sell brand new. We say, hey, look, it's going to look 85, 90% better, right? You and I know where the damage is. We might be able to find it. If you didn't know where it was, you'd have a hard time finding it. People are like, cool. B2B, they're like, I get it. It just needs to look better.
Is your process patented or is it proprietary?
It's proprietary.
Or both?
It's proprietary. We've actually looked into patenting it. There's some challenges around like how you patent color matching and stuff like that. But being able to match color and design and texture, everything on site is, there's certain elements there that would be hard to patent.
Okay. I have a total investment on the item 7, very inexpensive, $135 to 235, and then it says depends on territory size. How am I getting to the high side of that range?
Yeah, and I always say depends on territory size and also how much, like we always encourage people get more capital, right? Like you'll sleep better. Just, you may not even use it, but like get more working capital. You know, you get your $60,000 worth of working capital. Our typical franchise, let's call it 450,000 population, 40,000 unit, multifamily units that are 50. We do apartments at communities that are 50 units or bigger. So that's your typical franchise. And that's right around $100,000.
Okay. Got it. Wow. That's a nice business. I love these asymmetrical investment type deals.
Oh yeah. And our COGS are like, your typical repair is two tablespoons of product. So like I just ran our numbers in Portland. Our Portland numbers were 3.4%. That was our cost of goods for
I know, I heard you riffing cost of goods and labor before, and I'm going, is that accurate? Like, why would you say that number if it wasn't a real number?
Yeah, no, I mean, some people get as high as like 9-10%, but yeah, it's generally very low. It's our labor that's the most expensive.
And you said the labor is around 40. Is that an acceptable number or no, in the 30s?
Are you talking about like for the year, annual? Our typical tech makes probably about, I would say anywhere from 45, you know, I'll just go hourly because it's easier. They're doing 20 to, I would say, from Southern California, where it's expensive, to Midwest, where it's less expensive, $20 to $30 an hour is kind of like your range. That's all it.
That's good to know. What I was looking for is, on a P&L, what's my cost of labor for this business model?
Yeah, probably 45 to, like, for the really expensive ones, maybe 52%.
Okay, got it. Your item 19 is very impressive. You broke it up in quartiles, which I love. So your top 25%, average revenue of $1.16 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where your highest in that quartile was the $2.6 million couple, the husband and wife. The second quartile, you have the average gross revenue of $660,000. On the high side was $800,000. The third quartile is $422,000. And even if you're a loser, when I say loser, I don't know how long these people have been in business, but if you're in the bottom
bottom quartile.
Yeah. Right. Well, and that's usually what puts them there. It's like, look, I've only been doing this for 5 months or 12 months or 13, whatever it is. They're young. They're still doing an average of $200,000.
Yeah.
On the high side was $307,000.
Yeah.
I know brick and mortar businesses that aren't doing $300,000 a year.
Yeah.
No, and they're brick and mortar with $8,000 a rent, you know, $8,000 a month in rent.
Yeah, we just have very low overhead, you know. But Eddie Curry once told me this when he first started, and it rings true today. This business, you can't save yourself to prosperity. There's a certain, you can tweak things here and there, but we're a sales business. Like, you got to educate your customer.
It's one of my favorite lines, actually. You can't cut your way to prosperity.
Yep.
Because everyone goes, hey, economy's tight, let's cut everything. You can't cut your way to win. You can't cut your way to prosperity. It's so true.
And it's one of these things where, like, we'll get a franchisee who's like Six Sigma, you know, lean, and he's gone through spending hours on spreadsheets and pivot tables and how he can cut, you know, a couple hundred dollars out of his monthly budget. I'm like, take that time and go talk to your customers. That's how you build a business.
That's what I meant before about, so you're obsessing over that?
Yeah.
Like, you're obsessing over saving $200. The phone is ringing and it's a property manager or a chief engineer of the Hilton. And it's like, tell them I'll call them back. I got to work on this spreadsheet to save $200. And the guy wants to give you $200,000.
Yeah.
Like, it's shit like that I go, what are you doing? Like, there's nothing more deceptive than the obvious. Obsess over acquiring new customers. Obsess over your reviews. Obsess over your culture. Obsess over your margin. Yeah. Exactly. People, product, process.
Yep.
Obsess over that. Don't worry about your college class you took. We're coming up on time. What didn't we talk about that you'd like to announce or something? It's like, look, this is important to me. We didn't talk about it.
Let me think here. That's a good question. I talked about our culture. We're constantly developing and building out. So, like, you know, I don't know what the typical support structure is for franchisors, but we're near 50. We're at 50, really close to 50 employees with the 107 units that we have. We are constantly looking to develop more and more, like, processes, software, our internal staff. Our goal is, and we're family-owned business, you know? So when we're talking to potential franchisees, we're looking for people who want a partner, who are in this for the long haul. We're in this for the long haul. We're not looking to flip to PE or anything like that. But we want people who really match our culture. It's serve others, be a problem solver, trust the process. You can do those three things and you're in it for the long haul. We'd love to talk. But not looking for any, like, I want to turn and make as much money as I can in 3 years and flip this thing. That's not our franchisee.
Right. Well said. I like it.
Yeah.
This was great. I love learning about your brand. I like what you're building. I appreciate it. Appreciate your time today, man.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jacob.
Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss out on more great content. And if you're considering investing in a franchise, whether it's the brand you feature today or another opportunity, we're here to help. Visit us at franocity.com. That's FranOcity.com. We love to help you take that next step towards business ownership.